Welcome back to Geek Show Arcade. Oh, yeah.
Boy.
That's right.
Beep boop.
It's the Geek Show Arcade where we talk about video games and video game related things. Let's kick it off by introducing our panelists. Back guest paneling today, it's Lang.
Oh, I made it for a second round, guys.
Look at you.
Good job.
Thank you. Who would have thought?
You were on time and everything for the second round.
It was tough, let me tell you. I'm Lang.
I struggle.
Find me on Instagram or Blue Sky. That's really all I do, because if you try to find me on Facebook, it will be the happier side that only my mother sees.
Family oriented Lang.
So yeah.
All right. Amazing. There you go. All right, down there by Lang, he's Owen.
Hey there, you beautiful listeners and watchers, if you're watching on YouTube. If you haven't gone to YouTube and watched, like, what are you even doing?
There
you
are know? Dozens
comment,
of
leave,
them.
Leave a comment and subscribe.
You smash that like button. Or is that how you say it?
Yep.
That was,
you can
that
find
was
me
so
here,
2017.
Mostly. I know, right? It's like,
you
smash
know, most
that
of our
like
subscribers
button.
That watch our show are not subscribed. You should subscribe.
You should subscribe. Anyway, find me here or on the Geek Show Help Desk. That's the two places you're going to get the most of me nowadays. I occasionally scuttle around on X/Twitter, but
what about the
mostly TikTok?
Working.
TikTok, I don't do that. After I have read some of the privacy stuff has come out lately that TikTok
yep.
is getting from you.
Yep.
And
have you read it on Instagram?
It's past even
guilty.
My threshold. For TikTok.
Wow.
But
this must be your threshold. That must be
I know,
bad.
But I still spent 7 hours on there today.
You know, so it's not past his threshold.
Conservatively.
Threshold anyway. Not passed.
I feel like all I'm right. going to get to the bottom of it one time. One day I'll get to the bottom
someday
of TikTok.
You'll scroll all the way down to the first TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He's Jaren. He doesn't do the TikToks.
Nope, I don't. I'm Jaren, and you can find me on Twitter at Jaren. And I have something special for you YouTube watchers. This
is a
Sega Nomad.
Yes, sir.
What?
This was a portable Sega Genesis that came out in the 90s.
Show the top. You can see where the full-size Genesis game goes in there.
It goes
Whoa,
into this cartridge
so
right
cool.
here.
Where'd you get that?
Look how thick it is compared
it
is to
a
my hand.
Thick boy.
Is that from your past? Is this
actually is mine.
Played
yeah.
by Jaren?
Yes, I bought this with my own money.
Whoa!
Wait, does it take C batteries?
It doesn't even have a battery pack on it. I think you bought it separately,
in.
And you put it in right here with these pins. You like
Jeez.
Lock it in there.
Awesome.
Yeah, so and look even, how big that screen is. It is like 2 inches.
Even Sega was like, that's guys, cool. we can't even get away with batteries in this. Even after
yeah.
Game Gear, this would be awesome. That much worse.
Was this after Game Gear?
This yeah. was after Game Gear, which I also have right here too.
Do you have the modified version that you?
Here's
made
the Game
it so
Gear.
You can play
wow.
the.
I forgot how chunky that thing was.
Play off here's of yeah. power.
Here's the magnifying glass for the Game Gear.
Whoa!
You clip it on, put it over the screen right there.
Make sure
yeah.
you can see those
good
pixels.
Stuff.
Remember that when all was all the rage with the Game Boy too, like the light you could slide down the side, the light adapter
yeah.
for the original Game Boy.
All that was like an old school watch light.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so you can play in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. The D-pad though, it feels actually pretty good on the Nomad. I was surprised.
Are you fondling it right now?
He
I
is.
Am. It feels like in between a joystick and a D-pad. It's kind of weird.
That's a quote.
We better
quote,
move along.
Are you
Jaren.
Fondling that right now?
Who else likes to fondle things?
I'm making the second
game.
Lando?
What
Here
was that?
Here we go. Lando doesn't fondle
hey.
Things as much as Jaren.
Not at all. I definitely don't fondle things ever. That I make a point not to, actually. It's Lando! It's me. I'm here at the game show. I'm going to talk and say words and do things about games. It's going to be the best. I'm so
we'll
excited.
See.
We will see, Tony. We will, won't we? speaking of Tony, he's our host.
Yo, I'm Tony. Check me out on Twitter at QuadTTony or on other Geek Show podcasts. All right. Do we have any emails?
We do.
Email.
Got an email from Chris, subject line Halo. He said, I just finished the Master Chief Collection and
nice.
Infinite on PC. Will there be another Halo game to continue the story? Thank
100%.
You, Chris.
There's no way Microsoft is abandoning that IP. There will be another Halo game, and they have also announced, I believe, that they are ditching their custom engine that they've worked on for years and years, and
finally
they're moving to Unreal 5.
Nice. Speaking of which, did you guys see the new season of Halo?
Not yet.
I'm halfway through it, and it's pretty good, actually.
Oh,
like, much
man,
better. I enjoyed the first season, and the second season is way better.
Oh, yeah. I think it's because they get closer in line with game lore.
Yeah, maybe.
But anyway.
Chris, you should try out Halo 5 on Xbox if you can. That was a Halo game. Sounds like you haven't played that one yet.
It was. Yeah, if he's only played it on...
It was a game, for sure.
I was going to say, doesn't that... That makes a leap from the lore, doesn't it, a little bit?
They took
leap
away...
From, it is it the was, lore. How can it make a leap from
was,
the lore?
It was the first one... Plenty it was the first leaps. One that really pulled away from couch co-op, and...
Yeah, there was a lot of missteps with Halo 5. A
lot of missteps there.
Mistakes were made.
I still enjoyed it.
I still
but
did.
But not for the reasons I liked the other games.
Yeah.
Or at least all the same reasons.
It did progress the story a little bit. It was more like a cinematic adventure.
Yep. All right. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Cool. Thanks for writing in. All right. Let's talk about... Jaren brought up some handheld stuff. And so what better time to jump into the churning of the rumor mill for an Xbox handheld?
Gassed up.
Hype train. So, yep.
The
shovel
wheel
that
churns.
Coal, shovel that coal into the hype train's engine, and let's get moving. We're going to get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
Yeah.
The Xbox handheld is not confirmed, but it is heavily rumored. And in a recent interview, Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, all but said it's happening. Now, a handheld, I believe, was in the leaked, timeline, I guess, product line from the some of the litigation that Microsoft was going through for the Activision Blizzard buyout.
Right.
And Phil Spencer already said that that is a really old timeline and that doesn't really apply. But that doesn't mean that they aren't doing some of this stuff on there. So basically, Phil Spencer says the Xbox hardware team is currently considering, quote, different hardware form factors and things they could go do. And then also, what should we build to find new players? And that would be a completely new area for Microsoft Xbox as a handheld.
And what's cool about Xbox is they've already mapped out a handheld path with the Series S, a more lower powered machine that already has all support for all the Xbox games. So that sounds really cool and compelling, because you'd instantly have a handheld with hundreds of titles that you could play, well, probably thousands with the back compat stuff.
Not to mention Game Pass.
Yep.
Game Pass
would be huge on that. So, Jaren, did you watch that video the Fox made on YouTube? About what he thinks.
No.
Okay, so he made a really compelling argument about how, I don't want to say simple, but definitely how an Xbox handheld could be done. And he used one of his AMD 8840U powered devices to show what kind of power envelope that you could use and still get Series S level performance with the newer versions of AMD's SoCs. Because you got to remember, the Xbox Series S is built on Zen 2 architecture for CPU, and we're moving into Zen 5 within the next 6 months, roughly, maybe a little bit longer, 6 to 8 months. And RDNA 3... And we're moving into on the Xbox Series S, and we're moving into RDNA 4 territory probably within the next year. So those are the kinds of things that if you had a partner like Microsoft, AMD would want them to have access to their best stuff at the time to make the best possible device using their SoCs.
So, question to the panelists here. Would you rather buy a PS5 Pro or an Xbox handheld? Because it seems like Microsoft isn't going to have an Xbox Series Pro.
Yeah,
they might have a handheld.
Phil Spencer already said that they're not planning on doing a mid-cycle refresh. And that was recently, like within the last 6 months. Mm. If I didn't already have two handhelds, I would definitely be very excited for an Xbox handheld. But I've got the Steam Deck OLED and the ROG Ally, and I don't know what it would do that those two don't already do for me.
Right.
So
Game Pass is the one area where I'd be interested.
But you can do Game Pass on ROG Ally or a GPU.
Yeah, because it's Windows.
You know, yeah. It's Windows.
I mean, depending on what level of Game Pass you pay for, right?
The Ally experience isn't too great, though, for the console crowd. And the battery life isn't great either.
It's true. And that's another thing to consider. Do you want a more console-like experience? Because that's a Steam Deck.
Yes, please.
Or that's a handheld Xbox.
Well, I think that's one of the things Phil Spencer notes in this article. He's like, you know, I want it to feel like when I turn on the television or whatever, he's like, I want it to feel like my dashboard of my Xbox. Like, so, you know, he wants that console feel for this. So we'll see. I don't know. I think I would probably go at the PS5 Pro.
Would you really?
No, not me. The freaking handheld Xbox is like a no brainer.
Yeah.
Yes, please. Give me that.
What do you think?
Like a handheld Xbox that you can hook up to the TV like a Switch. That seems like a very compelling product to me.
Mm.
I'd go handheld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I probably would too if I had to choose between the two. So the thing with the PS5 Pro is Sony's already said they don't have any new Sony big first party games coming out for at least the next year. And so that really tamped down any enthusiasm I had for the PS5.
Well, I have no PS5, but like no PlayStation at all. So,
okay,
maybe some games.
You want to dip your toes in the stuff you haven't played yet, which there's some excellent stuff. So that's good.
Yeah, it's coming out on PC anyway. You don't.
Yep. That's true.
Valid point. All right, so we will keep you updated on any news that comes out of this, but very potentially exciting things. Now let's talk about things that are less exciting. Dragon's Dogma has not launched to very good consumer reviews.
It's been interesting because it got such praise right before it launched. And now, then it launched, and you look at Steam, the user reviews, it's overwhelmingly
negative.
Mostly negative?
Has it made it all the way down to overwhelmingly negative?
I want to check now. But it was in either mostly or overwhelming. And it has severe technical issues, very limited CPU. I mean, the way very limited CPU performance. And surprisingly, it has microtransactions everywhere. And it's not like the typical buy an outfit or
skin or whatever.
Or skin, yeah. It's really bizarre stuff like Wakestone. Restore the dead to life. So you can buy for $1 the ability to revive your character.
But you can just earn it in the game.
Or you can spend $2 to change the way your character looks. You can spend $3 to enable some form of fast traveling, which
is just like table stakes for an RPG.
It's not the only way to fast travel, but it's another way to fast travel.
It's made its way up to mixed.
Yeah.
It's mixed. Yeah, all right.
Which does not go in line with the critic reviews when it first came out.
Yeah. So really bizarre microtransactions, but when you see when you look at it from the perspective of what Capcom's been doing lately, remember the story we had a couple months ago where they're adding DRM to older games.
Oh, that's true.
Which is breaking mods.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of waging war on the mod community and adding DRM to where it wasn't before. Now they're charging for these microtransactions. It makes you wonder, are they going to put these microtransactions in older games as well? Are they making it so mods don't work so that they can start selling these microtransactions? It's
make the old games less fun so it pushes them to the new gen, right? The new.
No, it's like selling mods rather than
a market for microtransactions on old games.
No.
Personally, so, but maybe
why add the DRM though?
I think they thought they were combating piracy.
Yeah, in old games, come on.
I didn't say it was logical, but
yeah. But I saw something on Twitter where they compared like cheat codes from 20 years ago, like a sheet of cheat codes, and then they had a picture of these microtransactions. They're basically selling cheat codes.
Yep.
Game Genie.
Yeah exactly. Game Genie. Oh, I have one of those too.
Game Genie in small bites.
What other random game device?
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be a YouTube episode.
Oh, Game Genie.
Look at Game Genie for the Game Gear. Check that out.
Great.
Game Gear, Game Genie. The GGGG.
Even has a little flap right here with the instruction booklet on how to do it.
It's got all your codes right there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a shame that Capcom's done this with Dragon's Dogma 2, because it was a very hyped, very looked forward to game by a lot of folks. But the funniest part about all this is they did not enable the microtransactions until after the game launched, so everyone that got early copies to review had no idea the microtransactions were there.
Yeah,
they didn't even know that was a thing. Shady.
So
yeah, you don't even need the microtransactions to enjoy the game. They didn't design the game that way, but exactly. It just kind of casts a pall over the entire thing.
Exactly. And yeah, if you want any further proof of that, just look at the reviews. You go see the reviews, the like journalism reviews that came out before the game had microtransactions, and you see they had a fantastic time with it with no microtransactions in sight. So
yeah, the most helpful review in the past day is not recommended.
And
it basically says the reviewer is basically asked to ignore the microtransactions.
Yep.
In their review. And so I don't, yes.
So here's a question. Like, all these microtransactions, don't most of the higher ranked AAA games limit their microtransactions? Like Spider-Man, right? There's like hardly any except for maybe some download stories, but like Baldur's Gate is like the best, right? I haven't played it yet because
there's no microtransactions in Baldur's Gate except for if you want to buy the deluxe edition.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing with the community. There's kind of a thing where it's like the gaming community at large will okay a game costing more, like full price, $60 or $70, if they feel like they're getting the whole game and they're not having any microtransactions or crap like that. On the other hand, if the game is cheap or free, they also think, you know, a lot of people also think, okay, a few microtransactions, that's okay because the game itself is cheap or free.
Right.
But when you combine full price game, $70 game, and microtransactions on top of that at launch,
it's just a bit greedy, right? Yeah,
yep.
Too much.
Like that's that whole, remember the freemium versus, you know, pay to no ads, like on the app stores and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of the idea where it's like, well, you're getting the game for free, so why not a few ads? Like, come on.
Yeah. Yep. Or same kind of idea.
Well, counterpoint, game development has gotten a lot more expensive and game prices have not changed from the 80s when games actually were like $70-$80 back then.
That's a fair point, but it also
means were they overcharging back then?
Oh yeah.
Or are they undercharging now?
They were.
You know? For sure. Like, are they undercharging now? Were they undercharging now or overcharging back then?
I feel like they were undercharging now and they were overcharging back then. But but the point of that isn't so much that okay, we need to pile microtransactions on. It's we need to change the way we make games and have them not be so expensive.
Make them smaller.
There's no reason we need to spend $800 million on a game or whatever the final cost is going to be for Grand Theft Auto 6. I guarantee they're in the $300-400 million.
Did I hear that game just changed studios or something?
No.
There was some news about that.
No, that's Rockstar.
You got suckered.
But yeah, I guarantee that'll be a several $100,000 game develop cost by the time it finally comes out.
But look at what they made over GTA 5 over the last 10 years.
That's an interesting point as well, because they were able to milk that for 12 years.
They can invest $800,000 in this because because they know what the output's going to be, basically, like what the return is going to be.
I don't think the problem is giant AAA games. I think the problem is that's the only thing these large studios are funding.
Right. Yes, that is a big problem. Absolutely, yeah. For sure. It's like the guy at the Oscars. I can't remember who it was, but he won. There was one of the guys that won for, I think, foreign film or something like that. He said, "Hey, Hollywood," he said this on stage, "Hey, Hollywood, how about instead of one $200 million movie, we get 10 $20 million movies?"
Yeah. You know, more movies, give people a shot.
Same kind of idea. And I think we're seeing kind of a renaissance of indie development over the last 2 years and going forward. There are a ton of indie games coming out that aren't $60, $70. That, you know, they're in the $30 to $50 range, and they're fantastic games, especially with the model that we have now. Like it or not, we have this early access model that a lot of game studios use, and it can be very beneficial if the game continues to evolve and
Right now, Pal World's one of those games out there that's just kind of like
came out of nowhere.
I think it came out of nowhere. It's $30.
Yep.
And it's been a blast, but again, it's in early access.
Yep.
You know, so.
But anyway, interesting stuff there. Now, let's talk about some really neat stuff coming out of GDC this last week, where Microsoft is showing off something they're doing to help make AI upscaling easier to implement. Not a new type of AI upscaler, but make what's out there easier to use.
This is me. This is me, my story I stole from Tony. I don't know why I stole the story, but I did.
Yeah, I was really surprised when you chose that one.
Yeah, you don't even know what upscaling tech is, do you?
Microsoft has introduced a new technology. I've done the thing.
Glossed right over.
DirectSR that aims to make upscaling solutions like DLSS and FSR easier for game developers to integrate into their games. And I know that's a good thing for you guys. For like Tony and Jaren, they're always complaining and moaning and boning about how hard it is to integrate into games.
I don't bone about integrating at all.
Moaning and boning about this anyway.
This is a good thing for you. Sounds naughty.
Because you guys are like, game developers have to integrate it. And it's hard. This is easier and better.
Moaning and groaning.
No, okay. He means moaning and boning.
I like that way better. In fact, writing that down right now.
You saw the birth of a new idiom.
Moaning and boning.
I gotta give Lang some new quotes, okay, guys? So next time we play the game, it'll be fun. So DirectSR will provide features that can be supported across different upscaling technologies to facilitate broader adoption of upscaling in PC games for Tony and Jaren.
Yeah.
I guess Owen, too. Lang, I think, plays games. Sorry. I don't know. Maybe. However, while the flexibility of DirectSR was underlined at GDC, it seems that the technology is still in its early stages, and a demo may not be shown until next year's GDC. So this is like a touch me in the morning, walk away kind of situation. You know, it's a tease.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Wait, what?
Wow.
Touch me in the morning and walk away?
You never heard that saying before?
After the moaning and boning?
Moaning and boning. Yeah, that's after the moaning and boning.
I'm embracing the in-between energy in the real show.
We got just Lambos full of idioms today. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, this is what you get in the game show.
So basically it makes easier for devs to plug in DLSS, FSR, XESS, all into one
The PB&J package. All the things.
So rather than just supporting DLSS, it'll be easier for devs to support all of them.
Which is fantastic. Anything that makes
they call
stuff
it what
like
they,
that.
What they say, they introduced it, Microsoft introduced it as the missing link. So kind of the...
Sasquatch.
Like you said, it's still a ways off. We probably won't see it in development, in actual
Microsoft has
games
only just begun work.
Yeah.
It'll be a long time before the technology is realized and widely adopted.
Probably 2 years away.
Or more.
But anyway. I'm glad they're working on it. That's fantastic. All right, let's also talk about some neato stuff with GDC this week. We got a sneak peek at something that looks absolutely fascinating, brought to you by Amy Hennig, who, if you don't know her name, you should, because she helped with, she was one of the key players in the Uncharted series.
Uncharted!
You got it. There it is.
No. Why?
Yep.
He just moaned and boned right there.
He did.
Nathan Drake.
<Sorry, laughs>
What? What?
Wow.
Gonna have to make sure and check the not suitable for all audiences box on YouTube this time.
Real close. It's right there on the line.
So this is your story, Jaren. Are you done? Or you ready? Ready for this?
Have you finished?
Oh, I was thinking about Uncharted.
Yeah, I figured
watch that
you
movie
were.
Again. Fantastic movie. Game was announced by Amy Hennig, who made Uncharted for Naughty Dog. When Naughty Dog was great, make Naughty Dog great again, please. Thank you. Anyway, it's a game called Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra. Initially, I wasn't very excited about this because Marvel games, they can be hit or miss.
Hail Hydra.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. But the trailer looks fantastic.
It looks so good.
I was shocked on that.
Yeah, it's set in Paris by the looks of it. Has Black Panther, Captain America, and two unknowns in there. Do you know who
no, they are known.
No, they're unknown.
Gabriel Jones, part of the Howling Commandos.
The what now?
Yeah, exactly.
Howling Jones?
Howling Commandos. Howling
Commandos.
Very
Gabriel
old.
Commando. That was
very old Marvel property.
Yeah, that was where Captain America first debuted, right?
Yeah,
he's in the Howling Commandos.
Part of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah. He made the Howling Commando group.
Yeah. Right.
So
why are they called Howling Commandos?
Because they were crazy. Command their way things into battle. And they howl as they do so. There's a little moaning and groaning going on, but
boning.
Oh right. You gonna keep going, Jaren? This is still your story.
No, who's the other woman? You mentioned the dude, but
Nanali, I think is her name. Nanali, she's a Wakandan spy.
Okay, all right. Anyway, big news about this game is none of the characters look schlubby in like all of the other Marvel games out there. Spider-Man, they all look schlubby. Marvel's Avengers, they look totally schlubby. But these character models look good. The schlub factor is pretty low.
It's got a low schlub factor.
Yeah, the graphics are astounding. It is just cutscenes, so we don't really know what in-game graphics are going to look like yet.
Yeah, so it's... I watched the whole presentation of the Unreal Engine 5.4 update that Epic had, and that's what this is built on, is Unreal Engine 5.4.
Nice.
And... They really made it seem that the stuff that you're seeing is actual in-engine footage. So it is stuff that is doable with the engine,
right,
but it is
pre-rendered.
Definitely a cutscene. Yeah, it's not pre-rendered. It's stuff that you can do in the engine. Now, when they do in-engine cutscenes, they do definitely push it a lot harder than they do in-game because they know exactly what the screen is going to look like at any given moment, so they can turn up certain effects because they don't need to use it for geometry and things like that.
Yeah.
So
this will be the first.
I'm going to tell you just from watching the trailer just now, you can totally see Unreal Engine's face mapping and like mouth movements in the characters. That's pretty compelling. That's awesome.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The animation works insane. This will be the first game from Skydance New Media, which is led by Amy Hennig. And since it's led by her, you could probably expect an action adventure type game. Not open world, which I'm very happy with. So something to watch out for. It's coming out next year. Is that right?
2025.
So maybe 26 if we're lucky.
See, it's games like that I look like I really stink at, but it's just like, it's so pretty. You just sit there like, oh wait, I got to start playing now.
Yeah.
And just,
same along those same lines. It'll be doing a cutscene, and then it'll transition into gameplay, and you still think it's doing a cutscene, and then you die.
Yep.
Like, oh, I'm playing right now.
No, I'm really excited for that story, what they presented with Black Panther and Captain America. I'm really excited for that take.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're setting it in during World War II. I don't know. For some reason, that seems a lot more fun than the current Marvel setting.
It's going to be rad. I think it's got mucho potential, so... Yes, very cool. And speaking of that, I mentioned briefly, we got what they call the State of the Unreal Engine 2024. This is where they show off all the new stuff for the next iteration, Unreal Engine 5.4, and what that means to game development on this engine. The most important thing, in my opinion, that they showed off in this engine, they glossed over in like four words right near the beginning of the presentation. Those four words would be it was more like six words. Anyway, the point was he said something along the lines of if it runs, we made it faster. And so the optimization effort they put into 5.4 over the previous versions is pretty massive. You remember the Matrix Awakens Unreal Engine 5 demo that came out a few years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Looked really, amazing. Really good. And they said that running that on the new Unreal Engine 5.4 would reduce render thread time by 50% and reduced GPU render time by 25%. So we're talking a minimum of 25% less resources used, which would mean higher frame rate, or if you want to push the visuals more, you can do that. So very, very cool. That's the biggest thing that Unreal Engine 5 has lacked, in my opinion and many other folks, is it's just really heavy. It uses a lot of resources, not very well.
If you look at Immortals of Avium, one of the first Unreal Engine 5 games, it's a pretty game, but for how heavy it is, it shouldn't have been that heavy.
You don't think it justifies the resource usage?
I do not, no. And another thing they added was better parallelization. Moaning and boning of CPU cores, which is huge, because historically Unreal hasn't been very good at dividing up the work on a CPU.
Right, between the different CPU cores. So really cool stuff. They showed off things like better volumetric particle effects, like for smoke and fog and stuff like that. They showed off some really good work done with the animation within the engine. Basically, a lot of the stuff they showed off was improvements or additions to the Unreal Engine 5.4 that will allow a developer to not have to leave the Unreal Engine 5.4 ecosystem to do what they want to do. You don't have less plugins, less exports out to other things when you want to add other stuff to it. So all good stuff. So really neat. Really neat stuff. Unreal Engine 5.4 looks pretty rad. Let's see. Where are we at here? Owen, let's talk about new watermark anti-cheat features.
This is another chess move in the game of anti-cheat / leaking, game leaks and stuff
footage
like that.
And stuff.
Footage, gameplay, whatever.
Yeah.
So this company called De Nuvo.
They're like a curse word in PC gaming.
Yes, I took to Reddit on the company because I didn't know who they were, and there's not good things to say out there.
nobody likes
in
De
Nuvo. in the Reddits for these guys, and you know, they mainly because the PC gamers say that this limits gameplay. Like it resources, like slows the game down performance. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they just kind of stick their tongue out and say, whatever. But Denuvo developer Erdetto has announced a new anti-cheat software. Their new anti-cheat software's newest feature, which is called Tracemark for Games. So it's a tool that lets developers add a unique identifier for game footage, not just like trailers or cutscenes, but like any gameplay footage. In theory, it's supposed to let developers and publishers identify players that are leaking gameplay footage before release, and can be set to visible or uninvisible, or uninvisible, invisible, visible or invisible to the user, so they'll have no idea if it's using it or not. So Denuvo is DRM for, like we said, many of the big software releases out there. So like Capcom and stuff. So it leverages the core invisible watermark technology trusted by Hollywood studios.
Oh,
so this is already technology that's been used for identifying like back in the day, I want to say 2007-ish, 2008, if you were downloading movies, you got these screeners all the time because they would send these screeners out to movie theaters to let special features or if you had people that like got, you know, reviewers that wanted to preview the film, and they didn't really have a good way of stopping those screeners from being copied by employees at the movie theater because it was just a Blu-ray or a DVD or whatever that they would play through their system. And then they started using this watermark technology to figure out who the studios were.
So you have to put a different watermark, a unique watermark for each like person you send it out to?
Yeah, basically. And it'll usually be your studio name or your... That's why it's not going broadly. It's going to mainly for game testers. It's going for press. Yeah. Stuff like that, because to try and do this for everybody would be...
I was going to say, you'd end up with a lot of unique watermarks if every developer had to have their own watermark, you know, whenever they take anything or whatever.
Yeah, and, you know, hundreds of developers surprise,
per game, so...
Big surprise, most of those watermarks were coming out of European countries, so where copyright laws aren't quite as strict. But yeah, so they're coming for the journalists is kind of what this article on PC Gamer talks about. And they just kind of say, De Nuvo is not very concerned. They're just like, yeah,
we don't care.
We don't care.
Here's they're buying thing, it. We don't care.
It's a big enough thing that they're buying it. So anyway, new watermark. So, I mean, it doesn't really apply to a lot of people, but if you're in the press, if you game test, watch out.
Yep. Easier to find you. Let's see. Follow up to last week's story about Super Mario Maker's final level that couldn't be beaten.
Yeah.
What do you got for us, Lando?
I heard about this.
This is. I have decidedly mixed feelings on this one. So last week we told you, we talked about, has Super Mario Maker been beaten yet, right? This is about clearing all the levels. And as of last week, they're at one level, a level called Trimming the Herbs. And this level is an incredibly difficult level, right? There's some humans that were getting close to beating it, and I say humans on purpose here. Come to find out that the level was beaten by a TAS. For those of you who don't know what TAS is, it stands for Tool Assisted Speed Run. And this is essentially where you plug your controller into a computer and have your computer do frame perfect input. So you program it to push the button on the specific frames of the game that you specify. That way, creating basically a program that runs that plays the game for you.
Perfectly, yeah.
And it's a legitimate form of speed running. And there's some really cool showcase items out there. But the problem is this guy uploaded the level to Mario Maker via TAS without telling anybody. So everyone thought it was a real level. Everyone's trying to beat it. Kind of find out he had this huge apology note on Twitter saying, yeah, sorry.
Please don't hate me.
Don't hate me. It was a TAS. And everyone's like, what? TASs were even possible on the Wii U at that time? And he's like, yeah, come to find out it was. I did it. So come to find out that the last level to beat a Mario Maker was a giant troll after all, which, you know, is kind of a good...
So you had to have it. Did you have to have a TAS to beat it? You could.
Humans that are incredibly close to beating it. There's some humans that can in practice have beaten all the parts of it. Now it's just a matter of doing it all together.
Oh wow.
So I think it's possible for humans to do. However, it's very, very difficult for humans to do. So like I said, it's kind of nice that Mario Maker, most levels were giant trolls. So it's kind of a nice end that the last level to beat was a troll.
It's fitting, yeah.
It's fitting to an extent, but at the same time, it kind of sucks because it makes it feel like, we're done.
Feels like the 90s, cool. Though. Like that actually feels like how games used to be, though. You'd you'd beat the level, you'd beat everything, and then there'd be one secret level or something, and it was just basically impossible.
Yeah, so there's still a number of people in the Mario Maker community still trying to beat this level. Like, so they're like, I don't, like, yeah, technically we beat the game, but we think we can do it. So they still have somewhere around 20 days left, and they're still trying. They're still trying to do it.
Oh, I hope they do it.
Yeah, so if you want to go watch them, go head over to Twitch, and there's people doing it all the time.
Wow.
All right, two quick stories, and then Lang has a review for us of his new toy. Story number
one. It's
not
one, a Game Gear, sorry.
Oh, it's a, bummer.
It's the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson of the Game Gear. might need more greats in there. Anyway, this was in the news a little bit ago. I just want to touch on it briefly. Apex Legends was hacked big time, and even during one of their tournaments, the hackers were able to get in there and activate cheats on the tournament players' computers while they were playing. Ooh. And so, yeah, so you had tournament players that would be playing and realize, I can see through the walls. I have wall hacks on now. And at that point, they basically would just back away from the keyboard and say, I didn't do this. This cheat just popped up, so that they wouldn't get disqualified, you know. And come to find out that, yeah, someone has been or has found a way to potentially totally compromise these users' computers via Apex Legends and do things like enable cheats and things while they're playing. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. If you can enable a cheat while someone is actively playing, you can do a whole lot more on their system as well.
Right.
And so,
well, I'm not downloading that now.
Yeah. I should have found a follow-up story, but, I don't know if they've patched it yet or not, but definitely be careful with Apex Legends until you hear otherwise. Not that they would target you. Obviously, these guys got targeted because it was a public event.
The tournament.
But, you know,
yeah.
They would be able to flex. Yeah, flex their hacking skills or whatever. But, they are, call it? It's an RCE exploit being abused in Apex Legends that could be delivered via the game itself or... Or RCE? It's anti-cheat RCE? Protection.
Right.
So you're either going to get it from the game or the thing that's supposed to stop the cheating from happening.
Yeah. That's ironic. That's
wow. Pretty funny. So, and then they also said change your their advice to any players in the tournament at the time was change your Discord passwords, ensure your emails are secure, enable MFA for all of your accounts, and do a clean OS install. And I'm reading this going, I know what this is like. This sucks. So, yeah, there you go. It can happen to anyone. All right. What's the other thing here? Oh, yeah, Jaren. Interesting news from Larion, our friends over there that created Baldur's Gate 3.
Massive success of Baldur's Gate 3. So the typical studio would be like, all right, let's make another one.
Yeah.
They're doing neither. They're not going to be doing any more Baldur's Gate. They're stepping away from it. They said their heart isn't really in it anymore. So it probably has to do with that they have to pay a lot of money to Wizards of the Coast.
Incorrect.
For D&D, right?
They released a statement saying it has nothing to do with their arrangement with Wizards of the Coast, nor their any bad blood with Wizards of the Coast, because immediately when this came out, everyone on Twitter and Reddit and everywhere was like, oh, this is because Wizards of the Coast are jerks. I'm sure it is. The Wizards of the Coast is terrible. And the guy that runs, his name is Sven Vink. Anyway, he's like, no, it's not them. We don't want to play in this sandbox anymore.
Right.
And any There's stories that we want to tell wouldn't work very well with the Dungeons and Dragons 5e rules, and so we want to do our own thing again. So
does Baldur's Gate, like the game itself, story like end very well for that, or does it leave it open?
Oh, it's a complete ending, 100%. Okay. There's no problems with that. They wrapped everything up with a bow.
Good on them. They released a game. There's a beginning. There's an ending. And they're not taking anything else from you.
Interesting. Weird.
Yeah.
I feel like Stockholm Syndrome, where I'm like, wait.
Yeah. My first thing was, oh, dang it. But then immediately after, I thought, this is genius. Because can you imagine the pressure of following up Baldur's Gate 3 with a Baldur's Gate 4?
Oh, my gosh.
They would have to make a perfect game to keep everyone happy. And so now they take a lot of that pressure with them still to their whatever the next game is, but not as much because it doesn't have the Baldur's Gate name. So
right. yeah, and story. They can do whatever they want, right? They can,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. They can create whatever magic system they want, have whatever rules apply to their spell castings and their
with the billions movement that they got from this, from yeah, this game.
They've made good money on this, that's for sure. And then we'll round off the episode with a review of a sweet, sweet gaming handheld from Lang.
Yeah. So Tony will tell you, I probably have nagged him for the past 6 months on handhelds. I've learned quite a bit.
Should I get this one? But what about this one?
What about this one? You should get this one. I don't know. I don't know. Quite a bit. So most of the time I'd nag him and he just replied, just get the ally, stop it. And I didn't listen. So
nope.
I started off getting the Steam Deck last year's summer sale and I loved it. It was my first handheld. It was great. But I really did want to try to get one that was Windows based. Before I had got the Steam Deck, I started looking a lot at GPD handhelds. For those of you that have heard of them, they've been kind of been a weird offshoot, but the last few months they've made some that are pretty incredible. I have a second version for more on YouTube. Here we go. This is the GPD Win 4. Last year they came out with a version that had the AMD 6800. Then this year they have one that is the 7800, and on Indiegogo they have the 8000 series now. They came out with versions with 16, 32, and even up to like 64 gigs of RAM, which for handheld, that's what I said.
Ridiculous. Yeah, 64 and is it's ridiculous,
mind-boggling. So this thing has been a lot of fun. So they have this one, and most of you are probably thinking, oh, that's just the Vita. Pretty much.
I love the Vita look. That was peak handheld right there.
Yeah, great.
So this is great. So when I had the Steam Deck, it was just a tad big. It wasn't very heavy, but I had big hands and I felt like it's okay. This one fits a whole lot better, with the only complaint I have are the size of the joysticks are a little bit small. They're like a Joy-Con.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. It works for me and my lifestyle. I go to and from work using public transit, so I'm playing on this. I have
perfect
lots of kids in my house, so I don't like to have a really nice setup yet because they'll terrorize it. So this is what I really wanted. They now have a version that is the GPD Win Mini. And that one, I was tempted, if for those of you that like the Nintendo DS look, it looks like a DS. Like,
nice.
Precisely.
Clamshell and everything.
Uh-huh. And it has upwards of the same really nice specs with a screen, same size as a Steam Deck, and runs at 120 hertz. It's really nice. Tony had mentioned Fox earlier. He does some fantastic reviews.
Yeah.
This first version had issues with noise and heat. This version, this next version that I got, is phenomenal. I love it. Now, for the fun little things on this, I'll show you. And for those of you that haven't seen,
let me make you big.
Oh,
there cool. We go.
Ooh.
So here
don't
you go.
Say that here's out of context.
So here you go. Oh, no. So let's see a good focus. There's a good focus. So on this side right here, this is actually a trackpad with a click menu button underneath.
I would love that on the Ally trackpad.
Over here, we have a fingerprint scanner.
Nice.
So this is going to be your YouTube. So I just turned it on. Let's see if it boots up. There we go. So there it is. And just wham, bam. Nope, that's the wrong finger.
Yeah.
So now I'm in.
Got to put all the fingers
in. So there it is. And then for functionality, this is the best part. Just this.
I love that slide just action. That's slick.
Yep.
So for those of us that missed the sidekick, this guy,
I got the 32 RAM plus, I got the 512 storage. I was just going to put a little bit more memory in on my own because I got it used.
And which SoC does it have?
7840.
Okay. Yep. That's the same one that's in roughly the same one that's in the Ally and the Legion Go. And,
yeah.
Yeah. It's a great SoC.
It's when I've been playing this, it surprises me because games that I play, I know how much it loads. We're all trained to be like, okay, I can take a drink of water. I can stand up. I can set it down for a second while it's loading. Nope. It surprises me. It's like, oh crap, it's already loaded.
Time to play.
It's been, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
The other functionality that I really love right there, this switch, you can't really see right there. There we go. This switch right here.
Switch on the side.
Uh-huh. It switches from mouse to gamepad like this. It just goes back and forth. So my joysticks and the bumpers are the mouse and mouse mode, and I can just move it around, and then I just click it, and it goes into a gamepad. So
that's cool.
Those, too. I am a complete sucker for gimmicks, and those gimmicks really sold me, and I'm really glad they came out with this version because I kind of listened to Tony and started with the Steam Deck. But then I saw this and gave my daughter my Steam Deck, and then I've been messing with this for about 3 weeks now, and I'm loving it. So go check out GPD. The other thing, it's all on the show notes. I put a review from Fox. I think I put their Indiegogo as well as their homepage. And the thing I really like about their homepage, they don't hide anything. They say, okay, here, go to games. And you're thinking, what games does the handheld have? And it literally goes through. It goes down and it says, here's the links to all the platform clients. Here's all the links to all the different emulators you can get. Here's the links for all of the hand mapping tools. I know. Like, that's why I was just like,
look at the link there. GPD.HK, not a US. Yeah, that's based. The other part.
Nope. Yeah, so be careful. Right.
That's what I mean. They can put all that stuff on there and not be worried about anyone in the US getting their undies in the bunch. Yeah.
So yeah, nice little form factor. It's got clear bumpers and nice triggers, back mappable buttons on the back. This thing's a hoot. This thing's a blast. Off Oculink. I think it's the only one that has an Oculink. So if you want to go crazy, they actually have
GPU on there.
Yep, that they hook up for extra graphics and everything.
So with that, does GPD win or GPD have a software on there where you can limit the frame rate like with the Steam Deck?
Yes. Yes.
Nice.
Yep. You can adjust that. Yep.
Very cool. And then you got a deal on yours because you bought it secondhand, but what did they go for new? Do you know?
New, I would say $800 to $900, to be perfectly honest. But that's because most of them on their Indiegogo right now are all the 8000 series.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want to look for something secondhand or elsewhere, they're kind of hidden wherever you look. I got mine off eBay. I got mine with the actual dock by them, a case that's made for, a Switch, but fits perfectly. So GPD cool. For the win.
What would you give it out of 10?
Solid 9, just a really good solid 9. If it was
solid
just
9.
If the joysticks were a little bit, just a tad bigger, even though my gameplay, I do a lot of platformers and fighters. I won't do shooters unless I'm on this PC. Mm-hmm. Joysticks were bigger. And I think it's just me. I need a little bit more time on it, to be honest. I think if I did another review and had it more set up and tweaked out, I'd give it a higher score. So ending cool. Higher score.
All right. Very nice. I like to see what else is out there. Competition in the marketplace is always a good thing.
Yeah. I love handhelds. If I could own like all of them, I would
collect them. Collect them all. They're your Pokemon. Yep. All right. Well, that is the end. Let's give a big shout out before we leave though to our awesome patrons. Patreon.com/ Help Desk Arcade. If you donate $6 a month or more, among other things, you get a shout out on the air, which Jaren has for us right now.
Thank you to David Roshinsky, Connor Keesaw, and Wiffleball Tony. Jason Eatman, Que Onda Carnal, is a hot dog sandwich. Yes. Andy Bird, Be the 8-Year-Old, Tony, the Home Theater Geek, Travis Johnson by Geek Show, Arcade Help Desk Stickers, at Pine Man Graphics on Etsy, all proceeds go to Lee George Cade's medical bills. Jeremy, No Name, No Color, Keslo, Eric Steinman, Eric Cruz, Onus Tech Cred, plus 49.9, Matt Nelson, Harry Patch, Adam, Aaron Faulkner, Stuart Lloyd. History is there for you to learn from or repeat, your choice. Ryan M. and Adam Hecht.
All right. Thank you so much, Patreon backers. Thanks for dropping by, Lang. Always a pleasure.
Always.
He's waving.
See, for I waved you again. I did it again. Audio. Dang it.
For those of you, audio only.
It's been a pleasure.
Cool, cool, cool.
Well, thanks for being here and moaning and boning with us.
Yeah.
On that note, Owen, take us out.
Hey, we hope you care.